of mutual understanding. Sometimes we give up because we're not invested enough in the relationship to fight for it anymore. Sometimes we stop fighting because we're exhausted by all our fruitless efforts to advocate for our own needs or point of view. And sometimes it seems more important to keep the peace than to solve the problem, so we pretend the issue doesn't exist. We can get really good at this kind of pretense, but eventually it will come out of hiding with sometimes catastrophic results. To prevent such catastrophes, we need to face our problems instead of avoiding them. We want the kind of relationship where we know the other person has our back, where we feel understood, where we feel like we can talk about anything. We feel like we have to agree for there to be connection. But we can disagree and still connect. In fact, we need to disagree in order to connect. Instead of deciding that our partner's behavior makes no sense or it means they don't care about us, we now start to study how their past experiences influence their behavior. Investigate with sincerity, without the threats or criticism that will make your partner shut down. Imagine a couple where the wife always has a meeting to attend during events with her husband's family. He opens up a neutral conversation about it. Instead of saying, "You never come to my family dinners, you're the worst," he asks, "Why don't you come to my family dinners?" He has to be aware that if he asks the question, he may have to accept painful feedback about his family. He resists being triggered. He listens without judging. She may say, "I'm sorry, I'll try next time." But he knows from the past that this is a false promise. He tries to get a real answer. She finally admits, "I feel uncomfortable with your family because they always compare me unfavorably to your relatives." He has to be very careful here not to let this turn into an argument about his family's behavior. Now he says, "I get it, that's not pleasant. But it's important to me that you come. Would it be possible for you to join me sometimes, but not so often that it triggers you?" She agrees to see his family once a month, and the next month they go to his parents for dinner. On the way home in the car, if he hasn't paid attention to her experience, he might say, "That wasn't so bad, was it? It was fun." But she had a miserable time. She feels misunderstood and explodes. "No, it was the worst experience. I'm never doing it again." But if he's been thoughtful and observant, he says, "Hey, I know that was tough, and I'm grateful that you came with me. Thank you." Through his efforts to understand her, this couple has avoided 3 arguments. The first, when he didn't complain about her behavior, but instead asked about it. The second, when he didn't take her issues with his family personally. And the third, when he listened with care to hear how it went for her. With understanding, the intolerable issue hasn't gone away, but it is no longer intolerable for either partner. Start conversations about the behavior or issue that troubles you. Ask your partner, "Is this something you enjoy? Why do you like it? What makes you do it this way?" Ask your partner why they are struggling to make the changes you've asked them to make. Ask questions and take time to hear the answers. These conversations give you the opportunity to understand more deeply instead of judging your partner and taking their behavior personally. Now you're working on it together. To reach understanding, we not only have to see that there is a reason for the issue, but we have to appreciate that growth is hard. If we're committing to elevating, we have to acknowledge that our partner can't make changes overnight. We have patience as they make their efforts. Acceptance. When we accept the difference between us, This could mean we come around to the idea that nothing needs to change. But it doesn't have to mean that. Acceptance can also mean that we appreciate the work our partner is doing to make a change, or that we're working on a compromise together, or that we realized we're the ones who have to change. One client of mine had a partner who confessed that he was addicted to porn. It was something he wanted to overcome, but it had been going on for a long time, and he didn't know how to let it go or whether he could. My client was upset that her boyfriend had hidden his predilection. The first step for her was to recognize and appreciate what it took for her partner to be honest with her. We live in a world where we see keeping secrets as deceitful, a lie that we tell to make ourselves look better than we are. But in reality, we usually keep secrets out of fear and shame. We don't want to lose the other person. We don't want them to lose respect for us. My client and her partner talked openly about the issue, and she learned how he developed his addiction and about his sincere desire to change. My client had a choice. If she cared enough about the relationship, she could be patient while her partner worked to overcome this challenge. Or she could walk away from the relationship. Could she accept the work her partner was trying to do? She said, "I understand him. I love him. I want to help him." "You have to accept the fact that he may never lose this addiction," I said. "But you'll get to know him much better as he tries, and that experience may change both of you." Her understanding of the issue gave her tolerance for the behavior, if it was in concert with ongoing efforts to change it. In accepting our partner, we learn to face hard truths with grace. She was supportive, encouraging, and patient. He went to therapy. He had a few relapses that he was honest about, and over time, this tale had a happy ending. He doesn't have that issue anymore. As for Sonia and Rohan, Sonia was able to use her new understanding of Rohan to discuss the expense of the luxury car. She said, "You're doing this for the kids, but it's detrimental to them in the long run. Wouldn't we rather save for their college?" She tapped into his psychology. He wanted the kids to have something he didn't have, but they could make it something truly beneficial. Rohan wasn't willing to give up the car right away, but he agreed to revisit the issue with her at the end of the lease and to make the decision together. Sonia felt that she could work the budget around the remaining year on the lease, and she was willing to be there for him as he let go of this need. Appreciation. To address an intolerable issue with your partner is one of the greatest challenges love presents. But if you were to find someone perfect, you would never grow these skills. You would take love for granted. You would miss out on the care, understanding, empathy, and deep appreciation for your partner that you develop in this process. In fact, we may start to see that the issue, the thing we couldn't tolerate, is actually an integral part of the person we love, and maybe part of what makes them lovable. This is the goal of the journey from intolerable to acceptance. We actually get to the heart of why our partner is the way they are. Sonia was patient with Rohan, and although he couldn't make immediate changes, he was working on it. At the same time, she started to see that he wasn't the only one with stuff to work on. She had her own issues that she was putting on the kids, wanting them to succeed to prove her worth. She needed his patience and grace too. My client Arden found appreciation in a different way. She was frustrated with her boyfriend because he seemed too attached to his mother. Whatever she asks him to do, he does. If she wants us to go to their house for Sunday dinner, we go. But when we dug to the root of his behavior, she had to admit, he's a pleaser. He wants everyone else to be happy all the time. The truth is that I like that he accommodates me in exactly the same way that he accommodates his mother. Love is recognizing that the challenge might be connected to a quality that draws us to our partner. All parts of them are connected, and seeing that connection leads us to appreciation. The goal isn't to study and track your process through each of these levels with every difference that arises in your relationship. This isn't homework. Rather, it's a clarifying question. Do you want to go on this journey with your partner? When differences arise, as they do time and time again in a long-term relationship, are you curious enough to explore and understand why the difference exists between you? How you each arrived at these islands so far apart from each other, and how to build a bridge between them? If you're motivated by commitment to and love for this person, your endurance for this journey will be stronger. Perfecting your breakup. If we decide not to continue as is or to elevate our relationship, then we separate. If you entered a relationship without coming to appreciate solitude, then you might stay in that relationship for too long because you don't want to be single again. If you rely on it to bolster your sense of who you are and what you want, you'll never break up. You think, I may not be happy or content, but at least I'm not alone. Sometimes we justify the inertia by convincing ourselves that our partner will change. You may hope that one day she'll become less ambitious, or he'll give you the attention you deserve. But if you've been waiting a long time, or if you've tried too many times, you need to recognize that they might never change. Dictionaries define broken as having been fractured or damaged, and no longer in one piece or in working order. This might come close to how you feel when you go through a breakup. Research shows that areas activated in the brain when we're in love are the same as those involved in cocaine addiction. So the way your brain experiences a breakup is kind of like the misery of detox. Just as addicts crave a fix, we can literally crave the other person. This happens in part because our brains flood with chemical messengers that are part of our reward and motivation circuitry. Our brain sends urgent signals that we should hurry up and retrieve what's missing. In one study of breakups, participants reported thinking about their exes roughly 85% of the time they were awake. This flood of hormones isn't the brain's only response to a breakup. Areas of the brain that are active in heartbreak are the same as the ones that process physical pain. But as researcher Helen Fisher says, the difference is that while pain from a stubbed toe or toothache fades, emotions can intensify the sensation of a breakup. We don't get angry with our tooth or feel rejected by the couch we bumped into, but with our exes, we harbor hurt feelings and dashed dreams, which can exacerbate and extend the pain. In this state, our brains can desperately seek oxytocin, the bonding hormone, because it decreases feelings of fear and anxiety. And we're likely to seek that chemical experience from our ex. This can prompt us to do some pretty irrational things. Those folks who thought about their exes 85% of their waking hours also exhibited lack of emotional control, occurring regularly for weeks or months. This included inappropriate phoning, writing, or emailing, pleading for reconciliation, sobbing for hours, drinking too much, and/or making dramatic entrances and exits into the rejecter's home, place of work, or social space to express anger, despair, or passionate love. We must find our way out of this chemical morass, and we begin by remembering this spiritual truth. We may feel empty, lost, broken, and hurt, but the soul is unbreakable. The Bhagavad Gita spends 7 verses talking about the indestructibility of the soul. That which pervades the entire body, you should know to be indestructible. No one is able to destroy that imperishable soul. The soul can never be cut to pieces by any weapon, nor burned by fire, nor moistened by water, nor withered by the wind. This individual soul is unbreakable and insoluble, and can be neither burned nor dried. It is everlasting, present everywhere, unchangeable, immovable, and eternally the same. Easy for the Bhagavad Gita to say, it's hard in a breakup to remember that we are all still complete, even though we've lost someone. This is where all that work you've done pays off. You've taken all the steps to build your ability to be in solitude. You know, intellectually at least, that you don't need a relationship to feel complete. You know your tastes and opinions, your values and goals. And now, in spite of all those hormones telling you otherwise, I want you to recognize that when your relationship crumbles, you are not what's breaking. Your soul doesn't end. Your expectations of your partner are breaking. What you thought you were building with them is breaking. What you had together is breaking. That's where the hurt comes from. But you have not lost your purpose. You have not lost yourself. Something is breaking, but you are not that something. You existed before this relationship, and you will outlast it. When you think about your consciousness this way, you start to separate yourself from the pain that you feel in the moment. Acknowledge the pain, but understand where it resides and what has broken. What you created with your partner is being dismantled, but you are not being dismantled. Your life is not falling apart. You are not over. We may not feel this way, but if we believe it, then we can take the steps needed to recover from the breakup, learn from it, and use it to bring that love back to all of our relationships. Let's talk about how to handle breakups, whether you're the one instigating it or your partner is. Breaking up with your partner. First, set a deadline for the breakup. You've already reached a decision, so why draw it out? Avoiding pain today increases pain tomorrow. Putting it off doesn't benefit either one of you. Carve out a few hours to meet in person. Be gentle with your partner's emotions. Keep your karma in mind when you end a relationship. Remember, the pain you put out into the world will come back in your direction. So instead of ghosting someone or cheating on them, be honest. Be clear about your reasoning. It's always difficult to break up with someone. There are no perfect words to tell someone the relationship is over. If you're too nice, they may not understand why it isn't working out. And if you tell them why you think you're incompatible, they may not agree with you. You might be scared to be perceived as the villain, to disappoint them or seem mean. You have to accept that what you say probably won't go down well. But you can shape the conversation around the 3 key elements of a connection. You like their personality, respect their values, and want to help them toward their goals. Try to articulate where you're different. Let them know if you don't think you respect each other's values or think you're the right one to help them toward their goals. This is specific and helpful and gets you away from the overly vague territory of, you don't make me happy anymore. and the painfully specific territory of, I don't like this about you. Do it face to face. Look them in the eye and be truthful. Keep in mind that no matter what you say or how thoughtful you are, your words can't control their response. They can say whatever they want about you to anyone, and they may not accept that you broke up with them for the right reasons and explained those reasons well. All you can do is articulate your decision with love, compassion, and empathy, but without sentimentality. Communicate with conviction so they don't try to talk you out of the decision. This conversation should not last more than one day. Once you've had that conversation, make a clean break. Regardless of who initiated the breakup, take immediate steps to shift your life away from each other. If you have things that belong to each other, return them right away or write them off. Don't use this as an excuse to see your partner again or to try to reconnect with them. Unfollow. Do your best to avoid seeing them on social media or in the real world. Don't continue to exchange phone calls and messages or try to stay friends. I know plenty of people who manage to be friends with their exes, but I think it's complicated. It can make subsequent partners feel insecure or give your ex false hope of getting back together. If you really want to give it a try, I suggest you take a long break, a year perhaps, in which you date other people to make sure you've truly separated. The less contact you have with your ex, the faster the hole they felt will close up, especially if you fill it by deepening your other relationships. Part of the hole is the friendship and bond you shared with your partner. There may also be a new gap in your community because some of the friends you shared with your ex are no longer available to you for one reason or another. This is a great time to reinvest. Gather your friend group around you to remind you that your love reaches further than one person. If you have kids, of course, you want to go to great lengths to keep things congenial. But don't confuse what's good for you with what's best for the kids. Don't use the kids as an excuse to see your ex. Be honest with yourself and do what's right for them without sacrificing what's good for you. Once it's over, it's over. If you broke up with your partner, resist the instinct to be the person who gives them comfort and helps them through this. You just decided you don't want to be in their life and told them so. Being their savior may assuage your guilt. Or you may want to leave them thinking you're amazing. You may even be tempted to keep a little bit of control over them. But let them go in any case. You can communicate your message as gracefully and honestly as you can, but you can't control the consequences of the breakup. Karma means you must accept the reaction you're getting as the natural consequence of your actions. If someone breaks up with you. If your partner breaks up with you, remember that the person who hurt you can't help you heal. There's no perfect way for them to break up with you, and the expectation that there is one keeps you enmeshed. We want the other person to say they're sorry, to fix us, to admit the mistakes they made, and tell us how worthy we are. In some ways, it's odd that we would turn to someone who is the source of pain in our life to help with that pain. But up until very recently, we shared intimacy with this person. They may have been our best friend. We told them what happened in our day. We looked to them before anyone else to make plans, solve problems, and process emotions. It's hard to accept that they aren't the person who's going to help us through this much bigger issue. Losing someone you're close to, especially since that someone is them. How can they stop talking to you when you're counting on them to help you feel better? But it was never that person's job to make you happy. That was and is your job. So you must set them free. It's fine to ask questions so that you understand their reasoning better, but don't pressure them to stay in the relationship. You don't want to stay with someone who has already checked out. Important as it is to reflect on what went wrong, resist the urge to help your ex see the error of their ways. You might feel like they're getting away with bad behavior, or they're making a big mistake. Maybe you can see them having a blast all over social media. They've hurt you, and you'd prefer they didn't proceed to have what looks like a great time while you're alone and unhappy. You might want revenge. You might even feel like you need revenge to achieve closure. You want to serve up that person's karma. But if you act out of revenge, that will only bring you negative karma. The law of karma states that everyone will receive an equal and opposite reaction to their action. You don't want to be the pain in someone's life. Karma will do what it needs to do. In my coaching practice, a man left his wife of 15 years to be with a younger woman. When the younger woman ditched him, he was shocked that she had been cheating on him. He had completely forgotten that their relationship started when he was cheating on his wife. Karma doesn't always deliver such obvious and satisfying payback, but actions always have consequences. Leaving payback to karma allows you to move on and focus on what's important: repairing your ego, building your confidence, and bringing what you learned from this relationship to the next. Don't wait for an apology. Closure is something you give yourself. Your ex can't give you closure because they don't have the answers. People aren't always aware of their mistakes. They often haven't clarified the situation for themselves. Even if they were to give you a reason, you'd still have questions that they couldn't answer because there is no good answer to the question, "Why didn't you love me the way I wanted you to?" It just doesn't make sense to ask someone else to heal your wound, even if it's their fault. If someone pushed you over and you scraped your knee, you wouldn't wait for them to go get you a bandage. You would take care of yourself. This emotional wound in need of closure is yours to deal with. You can bandage it most effectively yourself. The human brain is a meaning-making machine. And one of the most powerful ways it makes meaning is through story. When we ruminate about a breakup, part of what we're doing is searching for the story behind it and what we can learn from it. We reject the simple reasons people give us for why they're breaking up with us. Psychologist Guy Winch says, "Heartbreak creates such dramatic emotional pain, our mind tells us the cause must be equally dramatic. We can become conspiracy theorists, creating complicated narratives when the answer could be comparatively straightforward." A team of researchers asked adults who'd experienced a separation in the previous 5 months either to write freely about what they were feeling or engage in directed narrative storytelling about several aspects of their relationship, including their breakup. Those who constructed a meaningful story around their relationship later showed less psychological distress than those who just wrote down their feelings. We have to remember that these created stories are tools for healing rather than the ultimate truth. But once we have a narrative we can wrap our heads around, it's easier for us to move on. And we can always revise that story later if other information becomes available. Try this. Give yourself closure. Either in voice notes or in writing, describe the pain your partner caused you. Include everything you'd like to say to them about how they treated you and how it made you feel. The way they spoke to you, the way they treated you, questions, accusations, traumatic events, painful memories. Look at this list as an inventory of all the reasons it was good that you broke up. If you've been dwelling on the best memories, you're not acknowledging the reality of the relationship. So write every challenge, every mistake, everything that person said that hit you wrong. Is there anything that your mind is avoiding? Let yourself feel every emotion. You can't heal until you feel. Walking away from something doesn't reduce it. If you don't give an emotion the attention it deserves, it amplifies. In order to truly recognize these emotions, you must articulate them, look for patterns, and explain them to yourself. Now, next to each action that brought you pain, write down who was responsible for it. Who took the action? Who said things that shouldn't have been said? Who did the things that shouldn't be done? Sometimes the responsibility will lie with you. Realizing that allows you to take ownership, improve, and grow. You will also become aware of the mistakes your ex made. There may be negative elements that you suppressed while you were in a relationship. We do this because we subconsciously prefer the devil we know. You knew they were going to be rude to you in the morning. You knew they were going to forget your birthday. You knew they weren't going to turn up to dinner on time. You knew they weren't going to call you or message you, even though you'd have liked it. You knew what they were going to get wrong, and it was easier to accept that than to be single, in new territory, not knowing how to feel, how to move on, or what pain might come next. We accept less than we deserve in favor of security. We cling to familiar pain. By writing down everything that went wrong, you can more easily focus on the reasons this breakup was good for you. Look for the story that gives you closure. Perhaps you dodged a bullet. Maybe you learned a lesson you never want to repeat. See how this relationship might be nothing more than a step on your path toward better bonds in the future. Now read what you wrote out loud to an empty room. Your ex isn't there to hear it, but closure will come from the feeling that you shared it and the knowledge that you're writing your own ending to help yourself move forward. Learn the karmic lessons. Often, we want to wall ourselves off from our own emotions after a breakup. The pain sends us into protective mode, where we try to distract ourselves and push memories of the relationship out of our minds. But think about what it takes for a physical injury to recover. If we experience a torn muscle or a surgical wound, the pain initially makes us pull back from activities, as it should, so we don't suffer further injury. Then, as part of healing, the body puts down collagen fibers at the site of the wound. These fibers are far denser than the original tissue, creating a mass of scar tissue which does a good job of protecting the wound. But if we leave the healing wound unattended, the density of the scar tissue becomes problematic, impairing our movement, increasing pain, and the risk of re-injury. And so we approach our recovery thoughtfully, undergoing some kind of physical therapy to help us mobilize and realign the scar tissue. And then we rebuild strength in our broken places until we're fully healthy. The same is true in heartbreak. We can't protect ourselves forever. We need to work through the pain, understand the injury, build up our strength, and re-enter the world. As Tara Brach, a meditation instructor, clinical psychologist, and best-selling author says, everything we love goes. So to be able to grieve that loss, to let go, to have that grief be absolutely full, is the only way to have our heart be full and open. If we're not open to losing, we're not open to loving. Find stillness and space to recognize what is broken and what remains. Reflect deeply on what you can take away from the relationship, because no matter how much you think you lost, no matter how hurtful it was, no matter how much pain you suffered, unless it was abuse, which has no justification, you want to take those lessons forward. Every ex gives you a gift you may miss out on if you don't take this step. It could be a piece of advice. It could be a connection they made for you. Maybe they supported you through a tough time. Maybe you learned that you really needed to be with someone who makes healthy choices. Maybe you discovered that picking someone who checked off every box on your list wasn't a good way to see who was standing in front of you. Honor your ex for the gifts they gave you. When American Buddhist nun Pema Chodron looked back on her marriage, she found something surprising. She says, "I didn't realize how attached I was to having someone else confirm me as being okay. It didn't come from inside me. It came from someone else's view of me." Once she understood that, she knew she no longer wanted to rely on others for her sense of self-esteem. It was a painful realization, but it helped her shift how she related to herself and those around her. As Chodron did, I want you to reflect on what you got wrong in the relationship. What were the mistakes you made, and what could you have improved? If you don't learn these lessons, you may find yourself repeating this unsuccessful dynamic for the rest of your life. Try this. Insights. Let's examine the recent past of your relationship to gain some insights that will prepare you for future relationships. Reflect on what you gained. Reflect on what you lost. Reflect on your own shortcomings. Ask yourself, what did I learn about myself in this relationship? Wear something cozy, get a mug of tea, sit in front of a fire. Do this in a setting and in a way that feels comfortable and supportive, because you might make some uncomfortable realizations, and that's good. You may feel excited or energized by some things and upset by others, but discomfort often accompanies healing. Love can make us blind to others' faults and challenges, and our desire to feel good about ourselves can make us blind to our own missteps. When we love someone, we can overlook their annoying or even destructive habits and behaviors. This exercise helps us look at those things with fresh eyes. Start by asking yourself, what did I do well in this relationship, and what do I not want to repeat? Maybe you found yourself always putting your needs first and not truly listening to your partner. Or maybe you feel like you did a really good job of drawing healthy boundaries, yet your partner couldn't respect them. Again, write it all down. Now reflect on what you gained from the relationship. Was it advice, insight, financial support? Was it help in your toughest times? At one point, your partner brought value into your life. No matter how much you think you lost, no matter how hurtful it was, you should honor what they gave you. Next, reflect on what you lost by being in this relationship. Maybe it's your self-confidence. You may have started to doubt yourself because your partner criticized you. You may have lost time. You may have lost energy. You may have missed out on other people or opportunities while you were devoting yourself to this relationship. Finally, think about what you got wrong in the relationship. What were the mistakes you made? Did the relationship challenge your ability to stay true to yourself? Did it challenge your ideas about what makes a good partner? You must ask and answer these hard questions because if you don't process the mistakes they reveal, you're going to repeat them with someone else. Redefine your value. There's an old parable where a boy asked his father the value of his life. The father handed him a shiny red stone and said, "I want you to go ask the baker if he'll buy this from you. When he asks how much you're selling it for, just hold up two fingers. When you get your answer, bring the stone back home with you." So the boy went to the baker and showed him the stone. "How much?" asked the baker. The boy held up two fingers, as instructed by his father. "I'll buy it for $2, said the baker. The boy went home and told his father the price. His father said, "Now I want you to go to the market and see what the antique dealer offers." So the boy went to the market and showed the antique dealer the stone. "That looks like a ruby," she said. "How much for it?" The boy held up two fingers. $200? It's a lot, but I'll take it," she said. Next, the boy's father sent him to the jeweler. He held the stone up to the sun and saw how the light refracted through it. He put it under a microscope and his eyes grew wide. "This is a rare and beautiful ruby," he said. "How much for it?" The boy held up two fingers. $200,000 is a fair price indeed," said the jeweler. The boy, excited, hurried back to his father to tell him this news. The father smiled and put the ruby in his pocket. "Now, do you know how much your life is worth?" he asked. This story beautifully illustrates that we have different worth to different people. We are defined by what we accept. Part of what makes a breakup so hard is that this person who once valued us so highly no longer does. We've been devalued, but only by them. This is why we have to set our own worth and find someone who values us for who we are. Separate the mind and the intellect. If we still fear loneliness, the mind plays tricks to keep us entangled. We return to the belief that being alone is not satisfying. Being wanted makes us feel valued, and we attach that value to being with another person rather than recognizing it as the value we carry with us always. But these are the simple thoughts of the mind, and we need to elevate them. The Bhagavad Gita draws a distinction among the senses, the mind, and the intelligence. The working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses. Intelligence is still higher than the mind. The senses tell you if something hurts physically. The mind thinks in terms of what it likes or doesn't like. And the intelligence asks, "Why don't I want this? What am I learning from it?" So when we break up, the mind tells us that we liked what we had and we want it back. We miss our ex. We want to know what they're doing on Instagram. We wonder if they're thinking of us. At times like this, we might also have self-deprecating thoughts, like, "I'm not attractive enough. I'm not strong enough. I wasn't caring enough. I'm not powerful enough." You can't stop thinking, but you can redirect your thoughts if you don't like them. All of the "I'm not enough" can be put to the side. We train ourselves to redirect our thoughts by asking ourselves questions when we're making a decision. Mind: "I want to go stand outside my ex's apartment and see if his light is on." Intellect: "What's the point of this idea?" Mind: "I need to know if he's with someone else." Intellect: "Is this information useful to me?" Mind: Yes, because if he's with someone else, I can move on. Intellect. Do you want your own ability to change to depend on this information? Mind. No, but I still want to see him. Intellect. What else could you do that would help you move on? Mind. I could call a friend. If you have an intrusive thought, ask yourself, do I like this thought? Is this thought useful? Is this thought insightful? Is this thought helping me move forward? This is how we move from the mind's conversation to the intellect's conversation. The mind says, reach out to your ex. The intelligence says, reach out to your friends. The mind says, focus on your ex. The intelligence says, focus on yourself. The mind asks, what will people think? The intelligence asks, what do I think? Wait to date. Kristen had been seeing Bradley for a few months when he suggested they go on a running date. She wasn't a runner, but she agreed. Out on the trail, she jogged, walked, and even skipped, gamely making her way forward while he chugged steadily on. Then, at one point, he looked back at her, shot her an annoyed look, and took off down the trail, leaving her behind to find her way back to the car. That was just the latest in a string of red flag relationships in which men had treated Kristen terribly. Finally, much as she wanted to find her future husband and start a family, she decided to take a year off dating to reset her judgment in men and to spend time in solitude. Pretty quickly, when dating was off limits, men who wanted to date Kristen were popping up everywhere. Instead of trying to impress them because each might be her future husband, she was just herself. After all, she couldn't date anyway, so what did she have to lose? Partway through the year, Kristen met Nathan, a guy who seemed really nice, but when he asked her out, she explained that she wasn't dating until the following June. Nathan disappeared, and as the months rolled by, she discovered that she was starting to feel more confident, eventually realizing that whatever happened in her love life, come June, she would be okay. Then, on June 1st, the phone rang. It was Nathan, asking her out again. As it turned out, he was her future husband, and they now have two children. If we spend all our time post-breakup analyzing the breakup, we'll never move on. But we shouldn't move on by hastily jumping into another romantic relationship. This is a great time to start attracting people you actively want to have in your life. Friends who share your interests. Communities where you feel comfortable. Start surrounding yourself with people who fulfill your different needs. Someone you like to have deep talks with. Someone you like to go dancing with. Someone you like to work out with. Use this time to start new friendships and build existing ones so that you feel whole without a partner. Rediscover solitude. Refocus on your purpose. This is your time to really invest in yourself. This is your time to really get to know yourself. We can lose ourselves in a relationship. So now we have to find ourselves in the heartbreak. Try this. Checklist to see if you're ready to date again. Have I learned the lessons my last relationship had to offer that will set me up for a better relationship next time? What do I want to be aware of? What do I want to avoid? What do I want to make sure my next partner understands about me at the outset? Do I know what I value and what my goals are at this stage of my life? If not, I can take time in solitude to revisit these areas. Do I know what boundaries I want to set for my next partner? I may want to start dating but decide that I don't want to move too fast? Do I want to set physical limits? Do I want to wait to be exclusive? Do I want to be careful not to cancel any commitments for someone like I did last time? Finally, if you're not sure whether you're ready to date again, just try it. You don't have to be officially dating or not dating. Just see how it feels. Love's infinite expansion. As monks, we learn about Maya, which means illusion. Part of the Maya of love is that we can access it only in limited ways, such as only through certain people. We imagine that there's a door guarding love, that to experience deep love and happiness, we have to find the one key that opens that door. And that key is another person. Then you find yourself without a partner, or you raised your kids and now they're gone, or you and your partner still feel restless, like there's more purpose to your lives. Imperfect love teaches us. Imperfect love tells us to move on. Imperfect love forces us to break from our expectations, let go of the fantasy, and realize that it's never been just about loving one person or our immediate family. This epiphany, however disappointing it may be, sets us up for a whole new level of love. UCLA professor Stephen Cole says that the best cure for loneliness or disconnection is to combine a sense of mission and purpose in your life with community engagement. Spending time in service marries connection with deep fulfillment, and the result is a boost in health. Prosocial behavior, including volunteering, has also been shown to boost our immune system, combat the physical stress caused by loneliness, and extend our longevity. Sadly, says Cole, these days too many of us have actually dialed back our engagement with others to pursue individual health-enhancing goals, like training for a triathlon, taking yoga classes, or trying to find our one true love. Those things are all great, but the biggest benefit for all comes when, as Cole describes it, your health is a means to an end, which is essentially to make some meaningful stuff happen, not just for you, but for others. What we thought was the highest love, romantic love, can be expanded. Love creates more love. It is time for you to take a deep breath, to start developing trust in love again, and to prepare to deepen your capacity for love. No matter where you started, or who you loved, or how much money you made, you may get to a point of material dissatisfaction. You feel like there must be more. You don't feel fully satisfied. Some people might think of it as a midlife crisis, but this represents a deepening connection to spiritual work. With compassion, empathy, and selflessness, you are ready to extend yourself beyond your family and to find your purpose in the greater world. You're never going to perfect love in this life, and that means you get to practice love every day of your life. Write a love letter to help you heal. When a friend is going through a hard time, we comfort and support them. But we are often less patient and sympathetic with ourselves. If we're struggling, we tell ourselves to just get over it. But we would never say that to a friend. Try writing a healing note to yourself as if you were talking to a friend or someone you love. Dear broken-hearted one, I see you. I am here for you. We often think that when we have loved and lost, that we are outcast and alone, but nothing could be further from the truth. In reality, when we experience this hurt and this anguish, we become part of a vast community, the tribe of the heartbroken. There are many of us, and we are strong, and we are tender. Above all, we are healing together. This healing looks different than you think, because once your heart is broken, some part of it will always remain so. But this is not a sad thing. It is beautiful because this brokenness is an aspect of love. Perhaps you feel lonely, but it is an illusion. The pain you feel right now actually connects you more deeply to all of humanity. You may in some way have lost one person, but you have gained the world. Heartbreak doesn't truly break us. It breaks us open. As Alice Walker once said, hearts are there to be broken. And I say that because that seems to be just part of what happens with hearts. I mean, mine has been broken so many times that I have lost count. In fact, I was saying to my therapist not long ago, you know, my heart by now feels open like a suitcase. It feels like it has just sort of dropped open, you know, like how a big suitcase just falls open. It feels like that. The purpose of heartbreak and loss aren't to cut us off from the world, but to open us to it, to keep us from loving small. The reality is that you are never separated from love. If you want to feel it, simply share it. Love moves through us whether we are receiving it or giving it. And there are as many opportunities to experience love as there are drops of water in the ocean. We never know what life will bring us, but we can rest in this knowledge that each and every one of us is, in every moment, surrounded by love. Love me. Meditation to heal through love. To paraphrase Shakespeare, the course of love does not always run smoothly. Inevitably, life brings hurts and wounds. No matter what we're struggling with, it's important to keep our connection to love. To remember that we are now, as always, worthy to receive love, and we are able to offer love to others. Find a comfortable position, whether that's sitting in a chair, sitting upright on a cushion or on the floor, or lying down. Close your eyes if that feels good to you. If not, simply soften your focus. Whether your eyes are open or closed, gently lower your gaze. Take a deep breath in and breathe out. If you find that your mind is wandering, that's okay. Gently bring it back to a space of calm, balance, and stillness. Meditation to heal through love. Bring your full focus to yourself. Notice your breath as it moves in and out of your body. Place a hand gently over your heart and gently breathe into it, feeling the energy of your heart as it beats inside your body. Say to yourself, silently or out loud, I am worthy of love. Feel your heart beat as you breathe in and out. And say again, I am worthy of love. Repeat this one more time. Return your attention to your breath. Say to yourself, I am lovable. As you continue to breathe steadily, repeat this two more times. Return your attention to your breath. Say to yourself, I am made of love. Keep breathing into your hand, feeling the breath enliven your heart as you repeat this two more times.